Well, hello, everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome to the Front Row Network's Flashbacks, a part of NPR Illinois' Community Voices, where we get all nostalgia-like about the movies of our past, movies from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that have shaped the way we look at cinema and pop culture today, and how those movies have given us insight and hope in our everyday lives. If you have ever been the most powerful person on the planet, yet struggle to balance your dating life with world-changing decisions, then you may be thinking about the American president. Welcome to Flashbacks. I am Ryan. I'm one of your hosts, and with me tonight is...
Jay.
What's up, Jay? How's it going?
I'm glad you had me introduce myself so surprisingly.
I don't know. I just woke up like 20 minutes ago.
Oh, it's always something with you.
Yeah.
You know what I did today? Today's, so it's going to release later. It's Veterans Day. But Vudu had a sale on the History Channel's Washington miniseries. So I dug into that. Jeff Daniels does the
narration
of it. But I figured, man, he's a veteran. He's like the veteran, right? He's America's veteran. And he's an American president. I don't know if you knew that part. So I've been paying attention, learning about a president all day today. And aside from that, still continuing to read the news on the never-ending election business.
So wait, Jeff Daniels was a president or Washington was a president?
I hate you.
All right. With us tonight, we have a very special guest. We have another Front Row host with us. One of the hosts of Beyond the Mouse, our very own Craig. I won't introduce you all surprised. Craig, how's it going?
I'm doing great. I have removed the Mickey ears for this episode. So, I hope that you're happy about that. I got to say, I'm looking at behind you, Ryan, and you have a problem, sir. You seem to have a lot of physical media there. We're moving into the age of digital media. You and Brandon Davis, you're going to go down with this physical media ship, aren't you?
I'm taking it to the last room, man. I'm going to be playing the violin as it sinks.
Hang on. I want to test this. How much digital media, like how many movies on digital media do you think you have, Craig?
Do I have? So I have an Apple TV, so I know the number exactly. So is that unfair of me to say that?
No. I don't mind. I know what you got.
I know 136 purchased movies.
Ryan, go.
800, Craig.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Really? I'm only at like 430 or something like that.
I get those $5 weekends and I'm on it.
You don't have to buy them. You don't have to buy them all.
It's okay.
Oh, you do.
You do.
You do.
I'll tell you what, though. Apple did have a sale on this movie. It was a two-pack with Dave.
Voodoo has that, too.
Yeah.
It's a good day.
So that is a must-purchase right there. Sorry, because this was all happening last week and 3 weeks in the future. And you can still buy them, just maybe not on sale.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on, Craig. Really appreciate it. You're on here because you really enjoy this movie. Tonight, we're going to be talking about The American President. It's the month of November. Monster Cast is over. And two things that you can normally think of when it comes to the month of November is Thanksgiving and, of course, some type of an election. American President turns 25 this year, so why not talk about it? So let's take the deep dive. Jay, go ahead and give us a rundown of what this movie's about.
Hey, real quick before the rundown, I do want to point something out. The first time Craig and I ever met was in college in one of our political science classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we never talked again for many years, and then we met each other by chance through a job. But we're both political science majors as well, so I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
Sorry
to I mean, this is like purely shooting it in my veins, geekdom right here. I love the American president so much. I love Aaron Sorkin. I love Jay Hoffman. Everything about this is a good night.
I can leave you two alone.
I can tolerate Ryan Luton's. Everything about this night is going really well for me.
Yeah, and that class was during when Obama was running for his first term.
Well, it's funny though, Jay, I also met Craig through a political science class, so small world.
There it is.
Don't try to get in on this. I
want to feel accepted.
You just go sleep in your bed of physical media over there, and we'll
build myself a bed.
You're talking American president.
Also padded by lots of digital media. You have a different problem. You have a money spending problem, sir.
What are you drinking out of? Goodness gracious, Ryan. Sorry, I need to stop.
Bro, I don't know how you do it on behind the mouse here, beyond the mouse. This is how we do it here.
We go bigger, we go home.
Okay, all right. And you know, what's funny about this is that no one like you guys don't post your videos, right? So I let my hair down. Brett usually edits our videos and all this, so I have to like look presentable. He bought me a light. This is real funny. Watch this. He bought me a light so I look better sometimes. I don't have to use any of that tonight. It's so great. And I get to have a beer. So that's what I'm doing. I'm completely derailing your flashbacks. My apologies here, guys.
You haven't listened for a while. This is how they all go.
We're definitely finding our niche because just like our small talk takes like 20 minutes.
Yeah, we're turning into episodes of the Rogan Experience on flashbacks here. We're not known for brevity anymore. Should I do the rundown? I should do the rundown. Yeah. All right, story rundown. President Andrew Shepard, or Andy if you're about to commence adult time with him, is a popular president trying to pass a major crime bill and a massive environmental bill with an upcoming election on the horizon. In the midst of all this legislative action, Mr. President, a widower, falls hard for Captain Marvel's mentor, and a whirlwind and slightly awkward romance ensues. The president's daughter, Becky the Icebox O'Shea, approves of the new potential stepmommy, but a future president and a time traveler on his staff have their reservations. Eventually, the couple continue their romance with questionable political ethics intact, even in spite of Hooper from Jaws slut-shaming the potential first lady in the news.
You know, I think Hooper from Jaws was just, you know, he's just a little sore about being from the water. It's okay. So I have to say, when I told my wife we were doing this movie, and then I told her how you described the daughter with Becky the Icebox O'Shea, she says, "You are a genius, Jay." So thank you for including that.
Oh, man. The annexation of Puerto Rico means something different in this movie, though.
Right.
It could be something than it does in Little Giants.
All right. Unfortunately, our other flashback host, Excuses Aaron, is not here tonight. She gave us another one, which is fine. She's doing her own thing. She lives a busy life. We don't fault her for that. So Craig tonight is going to do fun facts. But we told him he's got to do it like Aaron. So, Craig, let's hear it.
Fun facts. Is that good?
We need Aaron back.
Oh, okay.
I like it.
So this film was directed by Rob Reiner and written by Aaron Sorkin. That's all you need to know. It's written by Aaron Sorkin. Starring Michael Douglas as Andrew Shepard, Annette Bening as Sidney Ellen Wade, Martin Sheen as Jay McInerney, Michael J. Fox as Rothschild, Anna DeVray Smith as Robin McCall, and, of course, Mr. Holland himself, Richard Dreyfuss, as Senator Bob Rumson. So quite a cast, really. It's like one of those films that has just a stellar ensemble cast, and I love it for that. Budget of $62 million. It did really pretty well in its opening weekend, almost bringing in about $11 million. And then the total U.S. gross just about matching the production budget at right around $60 million, a worldwide gross of $107 million, which is really kind of funny when you think about it because it had some legs internationally, and it's called The American President.
Right.
So everybody around the world just loving us, at least back in the 90s when this was made. Rotten Tomatoes score of 91%. And then we have some little tidbits here. Tidbits! That is for you, Aaron.
She never said that. So
she never says that?
She never says that. Never so. Says
that's tidbits. Because I'm better than her.
We may just have to have her start doing that now.
Bit tids! Okay, here we go.
Wait, what?
Bit tids!
The dialogue refers explicitly at one point to films of Frank Capra. Frank Capra. Capra's grandson, Frank Capra III, was a first assistant director on this film, which is really cool. Martin Sheen, Avery DuVernay-Smith, Nina Sosmenko, Bo Billingsley, Joshua Malina, Ralph Maringham Jr., Richard McGonagall, Tom Barry. Sorry, I know it's probably Tom, but I hate people use it with the H. Gabriel Jarrett, Ron Canada, Nick Toth, and Aaron Sorkin all had roles in this movie and in a little TV show called The West Wing, which came out in 1999. The Oval Office set for this film was constructed for Dave in 1993, but then it was also used on the set of a little-known TV show called The West Wing in 1999. Also, at the time, President Bill Clinton and his staff granted permission for the cast and the production design team to visit the White House on several occasions. In fact, we have five occasions here that they came and they checked it out. All right. Now we move into awards considerations. It was a nominee for Best Music, Original Music, and Comedy Score for Mark Shaiman for an Oscar. Really, other than that, no other Oscar nominations.
Bull crap.
just a really not a great run in the Oscars. They do not like their rom-coms in the Oscars, I guess. In the Golden Globes, however, though, it was nominated for Best Motion Picture, Comedy, or a Musical. It was nominated for Best Director with Rob Reiner, Best Performance by an Actress with Annette Bening, Best Performance by an Actor with Michael Douglas, and then also Best Screenplay in a Motion Picture. Of course, that goes to the man himself, Aaron Sorkin. And that is the end of Fun Facts!
Thank you. I didn't know if you were in bit tids or awards consideration, but thank you. Jay, we're going to have to talk at the end of this to figure out how we're going to get Aaron to do all that.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about singing it to the theme of The West Wing, like written by Aaron Sorkin, you know, like I was going to do it, but I couldn't figure it out in my mind fast enough to be able to do it. So I apologize, Aaron. I will try harder next time when you decide to bail on a podcast.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is when you tell a theater guy to sing something, they just keep singing everything.
My first memory of this film.
Before we hop into first memory, I like how you mentioned they don't love rom-coms, and yet the next year was as good as it gets. So that
they occasionally don't like rom-coms.
And Shakespeare in Love won a couple of years later, beating out Saving Private Ryan.
Now you're just killing me. You're only doing that to kill me, aren't you, Jay?
I'm not happy about it. It beats Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah,
that is the biggest disaster of the Oscars. But
you sure it was
a real crash, we might say. Also, Dick Tracy won 3 Oscars.
That's okay.
This is nominated for 1.
Awesome. Let that sink in. All right, let's talk about first memories when it comes to the American president. This movie was released in 1995 in November, celebrating 25 years. We're all young. We're in our 30s. What do we remember? What's our first memories? Craig, we'll let you go first. Go ahead, Craig.
Sure. So this I came to this movie probably like in middle school-ish. So I would have been, it probably would have been just a couple of years old at the time. I'm sure I didn't see it in its theatrical run or anything like that, but certainly I saw it before The West Wing aired, because Scott and I were so into watching different political movies. And, you know, I remember distinctly watching this along with My Fellow Americans, like, because that was also around the same time that came out. And two wonderful political movies. Also, Dave was out. My mom was like a super big fan of Dave, and she likes a good rom-com. So I think that likely it was kind of a combination of us watching it together, myself and Scott, or my mom kind of like having it on and us, like me kind of catching it that way. But from the beginning, I really just enjoyed it, because it does a lot to tell you about the political system and kind of what people will say about Aaron Sorkin, and a huge critique of like this generation, this era of Aaron Sorkin, is that he is an idealist at heart. And so he makes like the ideal, right? He's like Plato's version of democracy in action. And I understand that that could be a major critique, but as a kid that's interested in getting involved in politics, that's like the perfect thing you want to see. Like you want to see them battling for what they believe in. And it doesn't matter if they don't have the votes, it's the right thing to do. And that, of course, that amazing speech at the end, you know, everything that is in this movie makes you feel like it, politics are something you want to be a part of and that you can make an impact and change. And that's what I love about this type of Aaron Sorkin writing. So that was my first experience with it, was kind of as like a political nerd, like in middle school, high school, and just really digging it, even from the first time I saw it.
Awesome. Thank you. Jay, what are your first thoughts when it comes to the American president?
Mine comes later. I too am a political nerd, but not in junior high. I was more, I couldn't have cared less then. Didn't care when I was in the Army. It was really when I got into college and just was kind of experimenting with the classes, seeing what direction I wanted to go, and got into it. And then became roommates with my best friend, who was a huge West Wing fanatic. So then we became West Wing fanatics. And I saw this after I saw the West Wing. So for me, this is kind of, I would call it West Wing light. That idealism you're talking about, Craig, and how many people did Aaron Sorkin turn into political science majors? I mean, seriously. And so he's really, through pop culture, I would argue, he's created this generation of people who believe in that ideal government and the positivity of government. And I think that's a cool thing. And I don't think anybody believes his version is what reality looks like. I don't think anybody ever thought that, but I think we all thought it's something it could look like, you know, and what we expect out of people.
I will defend a little bit that I think in the 90s, you did have an era of, you know, economic prosperity, and this was 95. So this is before Newt Gingrich. And really, I think it was kind of his brand of like tear down the house kind of politics. And I guess he did come in the 94 midterms, but like still you're not getting that like vitriolic, we hate each other. There is 24-hour news, but it's not as partisan and as obviously like pointed, and like people aren't, you know, like this is like almost like it's 25 years old, but it could have been made like 50 years ago, right? Because of where our politics are today. So I do think that there is some validity in like the aspirational nature of when Sorkin's writing this, and also the West Wing, that maybe today looking back on it, it's like, oh man, that's so naive. But at the time, I do think that, at least there was a different kind of politics, right? And so that I can kind of defend it a little bit in that way, as an era, I guess.
What do you mean? You mean politics are really like polarizing now?
Something like that. Yes. Yes. Politics are a little polarizing for sure.
Awesome.
What about you, Ryan? What was yours?
For me, I'm going to be very honest with you. So this movie came out in November 17th of 95. My mom went to go see it because she was a big Michael Douglas fan. My dad took her, and she came back. She loved the movie, and I go, I'll watch it at some point. It wasn't really an interest of mine. I was, what, you know, nine?
Nine.
So I was like, okay. Fast forward to high school, and I'm starting to get into politics. You know, I'm starting to turn the age of 18, and I remember it being I just turned 18, and I was getting ready to vote in the first election. And you know, I was just trying to find my political identity, trying to figure out politics. And I remember my mom was sitting down to watch this. She goes, "It's on TV. You remember this movie I told you I was going to go see?" And it was on TNT. I just remember that TNT. And I was like, okay, I'll sit down and watch. And I remember being bored. But remember, this is high school. So, and then as the movie progressed, I realized there's a story here. And as I'm watching more, I'm getting more enthralled. And I just remember it being a movie that it's not an obvious love story. It's just a story, and it's just about people. And then, so I got more about 45 minutes in. I'm like, okay, I like this movie. And I finished. I'm like, okay, now I want to go back and rewatch it. Well, that kind of got away from me, and I never told my mom, let's go to the video store. But I watched it again in college, after I finally figured out my political identity. And I was like, okay, this movie is fantastic. It really takes, you know, like you guys said, kind of just that microcosm of politics and just kind of use it like that. And it uses politics to tell a story without ramming it down your throat. And it's not a love story as it rams it down your throat. And I think this is one of Aaron Sorkin's biggest strengths, is he can write people, but he can write people with a political backdrop. And I think that's fantastic. And he does it really, really well. So yeah, I mean, just kind of like that evolution of myself and this movie is something that I remember when it comes to my viewpoints. Now I think about politics, and I'm not one of those people that like to talk about it. But I do have my views. I'm very strong about my views. But I like to just keep them to myself. So, but I do like to think that this movie had kind of helped me solidify that in a sense, but it is what it is. Or just get a better understanding of what politics is. So yeah, those are my first memories. Let's talk about what we like about the movies. Let's talk about the takeaways. What are some big things when it comes to this movie that stick out? We'll start with Jay.
Well, I think anytime you're dealing with Aaron Sorkin, it's always the dialogue.
He's
one of the all-time maestros of dialogue and witty and quick banter. And we know there's several things from this that went on later to be in the West Wing. That's why I call it West Wing light, because it's not as serious. West Wing has it has a more serious tone. And I think a little more realistic, not quite so fanciful, but it's trying to tell a bigger story. Mm-hmm. But I think you get the walk and talks in there, and at least the beginning stages of some of the things that Sorkin became known for. Another big takeaway for me too is I like Aaron Sorkin teamed up with Rob Reiner. I think, you know, there is the part in the movie where what's her character's name? I gotta go up. Sydney, played by Annette Bening, you know, when she's first going into the White House, and she has, I'm just trying to keep this Capra-esque, you know, moment. And really, seriously, Rob Reiner, Aaron Sorkin, they're like modern, like together, they're like a modern Frank Capra-esque way of looking at some of these things. You had A Few Good Men that came out around the same time period. So I think the direction, I think Rob Reiner was able to work with that dialogue in a way that also added to that idealism that I think was built into the script. And just how bright and exciting and vibrant the White House looks, you know, it definitely has this and West Wing, I don't know how you can't talk about them separately, or I can't anyways. They just have such a way they even light rooms, and the way they show it just like makes it look like the sun shines through, and it's the, you know, the shining hill on the city.
It's not just that. Like I want to say production design, because these guys killed it with their recreation of the Oval Office. But like you said, with the lighting, everything, it's not just that. Like when it's almost the mood of the film, when Shepard's having a bad day, when they're discussing what to do with the three votes, it's raining out. Like this is a dark decision for him. And I think that plays really well with how they do that whole sunshine in the office and then darkness in the office.
Yeah. Well, and that budget too, like $62 million. It's a dialogue movie. It's every bit of it's gotta be on that set design. I mean, a good chunk of it has got to be on that set design, because it looked great. It looks great. So I'll stop blabbing on, because I can see
Craig. Well, no, let's talk Sorkin. Go ahead, Craig.
Well, no, I mean, I think to your point, Jay, you know, if you look at this movie and then you watch the pilot of The West Wing, they read like sequels, because the pilot of The West Wing, that was before Sorkin really had a 100% grasp of exactly which direction he was going to go. In fact, like Martin Sheen wasn't necessarily going to be, as the president, wasn't necessarily going to be the focal point or even a main character. He was only going to show up, and every now and then it was going to be more about the staffers. And so you get some of that in this film with the way the staffers are interacting with each other away from the president, right? This is, of course, the American president. You get Michael Douglas, and you have that wonderful interaction with him and Martin Sheen, especially like when they're playing billiards together. Yeah. And, you know, like they're going through and kind of discussing life. And I love that scene, by the way, when they're playing billiards and he says, "Oh, you're up, Mr. President." And he's like, "Come on, we're playing pool and you're not going to call me by my name." You know, I just love that. Like I eat that up. And of course, Martin Sheen does that because he knows that he is going to be upgraded to the role of president later. So he wants to make sure people call him Mr. President. So, but you know, it's just like, Sorkin dialogue. I just had the chance, and I'm not like, I guess I'm plugging this now, just had the chance to talk Trial of the Chicago Seven. And, you know, Sorkin, the way that he is able to build a scene and then fill the dialogue with not only what it needs to go and the direction it needs to go, but also with the wittiness and the humor that he brings to it. That's like not over like slapstick in your face comedy, but just like really clever banter. It's just like, there's nothing like it, you know? And then how he writes monologues. I mean, you know, the amazing speeches that come out of this, that, you know, that speech at the end that Matthew Shepard says is something that is like one of the best movie speeches out there, one of the best movie monologues out there. And then you have things like the pilot of The Newsroom, where Jeff Daniels delivers this like kind of searing critique of American politics. And like those things resonate so much because of the way that he's able to craft those words. It's just really not fair how talented he is as a writer. And even to take something that he didn't know anything about Facebook, but to make The Social Network and to make that a thrilling story, you know, I mean, that's Mark Zuckerberg sitting in his room making Facebook so he can try to get chicks, like, and he turns that into a best picture contender, you know, like, so it's just the way that he's able to write is really not matched by many out there at all. And I love every bit of Sorkin that I can. And this really starts that for me. I actually, this is maybe sacrilegious, but because I was more in the political side, I didn't see A Few Good Men until a couple of years ago. So for me, this was really my first exposure to Sorkin. And of course The West Wing after that, but I finally did get back and see A Few Good Men and I loved it. But you know, this is like vintage Sorkin at its best.
Could you handle it?
That's what I thought. I didn't know if I could handle the truth. And so I wanted to make sure that I was old enough, so I could hold that handle and not drop it. Like that bucket of truth.
You know, I like what you guys have been saying. And I just want to chime in my little bit when it comes to how it's written is, you know, you have these topics and these topics aren't necessarily going to appeal to the masses. I would think. I mean, yes, it's definitely geared towards a political side, lawyers. I mean, he definitely writes to a crowd. But what I love about Aaron Sorkin and his writing is that he understands people. He understands people and he can write people. And the fact that he's got knowledge of lawyers, people in politics, whatever, he can write in a way that really simulates life. You know, you believe that love story because we've all gone through it. You know, this is a guy who saw someone, wasn't afraid to speak her mind around him. And so he's like, "Come to dinner." You know, that's how relationships sometimes start. And the fact that he can weave that in with this great dialogue and this witty banter, this smart humor, it's just really, he really drives a story. Like, you know, I look at how I was when I first watched and I'm like, I was a kid, but now that I'm older and I watched it again, I'm like, you know, this movie is great. And the story really moves because you believe the characters. And I think that's one of Sorkin's strongest attributes to his writing is he understands people and he can write people, especially knowing the things that he does. He is one smart cookie when it comes to the world of politics, world of lawyers, even the world of Facebook, I guess. But he is just, you know, with his ability to write dialogue and his ability to capture people, he just, I mean, everything he does almost turns to gold, in my opinion. So
can I throw out there one thing, because it hasn't been mentioned yet on this podcast, and I, again, am in love with Aaron Sorkin. The one bad part about The West Wing taking off is that it killed Sports Night. Sports Night is probably one of the best series out there. Only two seasons long. Check it out. Find it. Enjoy it. Don't worry that Felicity Huffman is probably trying to pay for her child to take some, like somebody else to take their tests at the time when they're filming it or whatever. Don't worry about any of that. Actually, Felicity Huffman's kid probably isn't born during the fourth night. But still, don't watch it for that. But the Sorkin dialogue, and that is great. There's some wonderful storylines. There's a storyline in the sport, and I know this is a tangent. I'm sorry, guys. There's a storyline in Sports Night about homelessness that is like so incredibly powerful because I don't want to get into it, but it's so great. Watch Sports Night. It's well worth your time.
Do you think him diving into sports or the homelessness issue is because he understands people?
Yeah. No, you know, I mean, okay. I guess I could validate what you said if I wanted to, Ryan.
But he merely tolerates you, so he's not gonna.
Right. I agree with you 100%. Sports Night is one of those movies or shows that flew under the radar, and I tell people to watch it all the time. So thank you for bringing that up, because it would be a travesty if we did not mention that show. Craig, what's another thing that you like when it comes to another big takeaway when it comes to the American president?
It gets the Washington system and it shows you in a way. What I like about it is that it paints so much about politics as painting lobbyists in particular in such an awful light, because there are these evil lobbyists that are trying to, like, you know, pamper up these corrupt politicians. And I think that movies, and this goes back to that whole conversation about how Sorkin and Rob Reiner in this case are like kind of painting a very glamorous picture on politics. But there are lobbyists out there that are working for really good causes and really good things. And yes, like, there is money in politics, and that is something that needs to be addressed. But at the same time, not everyone in politics is evil. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are running for public office or pushing issues, or they're activists or they're lobbyists, and they are doing it because they really feel passionate and good about what they're doing. And so I love Cindy Ellen Wade because she is pushing this environmental message. It's funny that we're talking about the issue of global warming 25 years ago. And we still haven't quite gotten there yet, guys. But, you know, it's just like, I like that, again, you can show this to someone and it paints a far different picture than what you mostly get about politics in the media. We had an entire show called Scandal, you know, all about politics and how awful they are, right? So I just love, as someone that enjoys politics and wants people to get actively involved in politics, to me, like, for every scandal, we need like 10 American presidents, right? Because we need to tell people, yes, that's the salacious. Yes, there are corrupt people. But you know what? We hear about them more often because they get rooted out. We don't necessarily hear the stories of the people working the phones and pushing the votes and making sure that the climate's going to be saved. We don't hear enough stories about those people. And so that's why I'm really glad that this is this spotlights that. In this film.
Yeah. And I think the people too, that think everything's bad, those are just people that aren't involved, right? They don't participate in the system, in the process at some level, at any level, making calls and sending emails and, you know, trying to communicate issues that they're passionate about. Like, it's not hard to get a hold of your congressmen and senators. Like, everybody thinks it is. It's not. You have to make it clear what you want to talk to them about, and you can't. On the flip side, what I think it does show too, though, is the people that do work in the, I call it the DC bubble. They are in that's it. Like, DC's it. And they think the rest of the world, they think,
you know, us here in farm country live and breathe on every issue. And so I think it does a good job of that too, showing that once you're out there, there's absolutely a knowledge and information and cultural bubble that those folks are just stuck in and live in, and they don't realize that other thing. Michael J. Fox's character is the one who's really popping into my head with that. He's so in the bubble and every single thing he's passionate and wants to fight about. And that's it, man. The people that are out there full time trying to do, you know, whichever end, the lobby end, the staffer end, they're all extremely passionate. And that's their life 24/7. So I think it does a good job of showing that end of it too.
Yeah, I want to agree with you guys both, because I mean, for me, when I watched as a kid, it's definitely something I learned a lot, especially with how votes are gotten for certain things. Like the one thing I remember specifically is just the thing that says votes for, and then the days till the bill is going to be voted on. And that was huge, because I kept thinking that was a refresh in my mind, and that's what happens. So it really does paint this light of how things work in that bubble, you said, Jay. So definitely. One thing that I took away, let's go ahead and talk about the acting. This movie is stacked. This movie has got a stacked cast. I mean, you've got Michael Douglas, Annette Bening, Martin Sheen, Anna DeGreeve Smith, Richard Dreyfuss, Michael J. Fox, Josh Molina, who shouted Craig out in a text because got him on Twitter that we were going to be discussing this tonight. His response goes, "Hey, we're talking about American Presidents." Josh Molina says, "Yeah, I was in it." Super awesome. So thank you for doing that, Craig. I mean, just this cast is stacked. Even Becky the Icebox O'Shea's in this. and it's all fluid. Like, you know, I really enjoyed, you see how these people work, or, you know, they're acting in these roles, and you just, it's so believable. You know, Anna DeGreeve Smith, I wish we could have seen some of her press briefings as a press secretary. She's a phenomenal actress. She plays national security advisor on West Wing. She's a stand-up. But Michael J. Fox, I love his role. Like, when he's flipping out over losing a vote, that he just sells that to a T. Like, he just flips out. But of course, you got Richard Dreyfuss as a slimy person who's exposing what the president's doing with the lobbyists for votes. And it's just, of course, you know, he's Richard Dreyfuss. He's one of my favorites. But as Senator Rumson, he's definitely that, oh, I'm going to expose this in his private life, because, you know, he was a widower and that's where he got a lot of his votes. Well, now he's seeing someone and she's staying at the White House. Ooh, scandal, like Craig said. And, you know, it just really compels the story when you have a great cast like this. What are you guys' thoughts when it comes to acting?
Well, I mean, they modeled Bob Rumson off of Newt Gingrich. And, you know, like I mentioned, I got my years wrong. Newt came in 1994. And so certainly, like, that was on top of mind. And these ideas of, like, infidelity and things like that, I'd have to go back. And I don't know that the Lewinsky scandal happened after the re-elections. So, but certainly the idea of Bill being a little friendly with the ladies was not something new, right? So, right. You know, that's something that certainly was talked about and so on top of mind with people. But yeah, no, I completely agree with you. There's so many great performances in this film, and it starts at the top with Michael Douglas and Annette Bening, but it also goes through things like, you know, Michael J. Fox's portrayal. And then I'm also wanting to look up and see David Palmer. I love his portrayal too, because it's kind of like that, you know, again, foreshadowing the West Wing, Michael J. Fox and David Palmer are kind of your Toby and your Josh, sure, right? Playing off of each other. And such a great way to have that person that is so intensely passionate about something and doesn't necessarily wears their emotion on their sleeve, whereas the other one is so strategic about things and trying to get the message across and things done. And again, you see it. I love shows where you can kind of almost see it as a stage play. And this is one of those, because the ensemble is all wood and it just works so well. They act off each other so well. I argue in Trial of the Chicago 7 that the Oscars absolutely need a Best Ensemble Award. And this is one of those movies that also shows that, right? That this ensemble works so well together that the sum is so much better than any individual part. And I love it all. I would not have I don't think I could recast a single role in this movie and say, oh, that would have been better had XYZ been in it. You know, I just think that this is a really well done and well cast show.
Jamie. Yeah, I agree. And Michael J. Fox, I guess, was based off of George Stephanopoulos, who's, you know, now a famous TV news guy. I think most people would know him as nowadays, but what was he for Clinton? He was his communications director.
He was a communication director. And have you ever seen the documentary The War Room? That's mm-mm. That's worth checking out. It kind of walks you through that Clinton run. And so it's got James Carville and George Stephanopoulos and all those guys. One of those like really well done political documentaries. So check out The War Room. It'll take you back to the 90s. It's a trip.
So he thought he was great. Some facts on that too. That was when he was very nervous that his beginning stages of Parkinson's were going to be found out. So he didn't disclose because he was scared it would cost him the role. But you know, he did such a good job. This is kind of what got him the gig on Spin City, which is, you know, a much small, I never watched the show, but I know it's a much smaller level, more city politics than national, but it's interesting how it led to that. And Michael Douglas is one of those guys. I think as a kid, I didn't like him when I was a kid. I mean, he did all these, he was an Ant-Man when I was an adult. So, you know, he wasn't like doing kid movies when I was a kid. So I don't know. I always found him to be like, he's in the boring adult movies, you know, but he's good. He has an interesting charm about him. I don't know that any other actor has the same kind of charm. You know, it's very individual to him, like him and Jack Nicholson, man, they have like this, their own thing. It's a thing they have. And
it's that crackly voice, like with the salt and pepper hair all the time. Like, yeah, for sure. I get it.
Yeah. Why is that funny, Ryan?
I have salt and pepper hair, Craig.
Yeah. Well, you're lacking the charm part, buddy.
Very much so.
Yeah. And who the hell wants to listen to you? You know, like we're not listening to that crackly voice over there.
I drink my water so it gets less crackly.
No, he's great though. You know, he's very charming. He's able to command. He's a commanding presence. I think he does a great job. Richard Dreyfuss, to me, what's interesting is Senator Rumson is from this point forward in his career, he basically plays Senator Rumson in everything after this. Right? Like he was like the happy-go-lucky kind of goofy guy in his younger years, you know, with the Spielberg stuff he did. And then Mr. Holland's Opus, you know, he's a sweet, sweet guy with some issues, you know. And then after this, he's just a grumpy old dude in every movie after this movie. He got typecast, I guess. But he does great. It's great in this movie.
In Piranha, he gets eaten in the first 5 minutes. He's not a grumpy old man. Maybe he's grumpy because he's not catching any fish in that movie, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay, so there's some
your selection of aquatic horror movies is just it just fascinating to me.
Hey man, I grew up. My favorite movie was Jaws growing up, but kind of stuck.
Yeah, but Jaws is about a big shark, not like a little tiny fish.
Yeah, but in a group,
it's a bunch of tiny little fish.
Yeah. All right, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, let me finish, and then you can have your fish talk. Martin Sheen, I think, is really good in this. Especially, too, you know, I've seen him in a bunch of things. I love Apocalypse Now. That's probably in my rotating top 10. I love him in that, but he's like forever Jed Bartlett to me. And then to see him in this, which is not – he's not Jed Bartlett in this. He is he plays a great foil – to Michael Douglas, and they balance those two together. They have a really great chemistry. I thought Annette Bening was great. I mean, yeah, everybody was great, and everybody knew how to do the dialogue. You know, because we talk about how great the dialogue is, but I think you got to understand the repartee and the tempo of Sorkin's script, or else I could see it falling apart too. And they all got it. They got the tempo. They got how to do it. So yeah, I thought the acting was on point.
Yeah. I back to Martin Sheen. I flashed when I think about Martin Sheen and Michael Douglas and how they're friends and best man at my wedding, I think back to Martin Sheen and John Spencer, and there's that line when Martin Sheen is talking to Santos, and he's like, "Do you have a best friend? Do you listen to him?" You know, he lists off all these things. He goes, "That's your chief of staff." You see that in this movie. You see that repertoire. You see them. You know, you see that in The American President. So yeah, he nails it. Anything else that we want to talk about?
And we talk about the chief of staff on the night. We just found out that there was a new chief of staff appointed tonight. So that is very, very exciting stuff, you know? Yes. So
we got to be clear. Appointed for the president-elect. I say we got to be clear because Trump's just like firing people like crazy. And
that's true. You're very right. So appointed Ron Klain was appointed chief of staff tonight, so it to the president-elect. So it's very, very cool. Like it's neat to have that dichotomy kind of going on in our everyday world as well. Art imitating reality,
and right.
a lot of times reality imitating art in a horrible way is what we've had recently. So
yes. All right. So we've talked about production design, we've talked about director, we've talked about Sorkin and his script, we've talked about the acting. Is there anything else that we want to talk about when it comes to takeaways for The American President, or are we ready to move on? Okay.
Ready to move on.
Let's talk improvements. First thing I want to is small when it comes to improvement. I can't really think of anything when it comes to improvement about this movie. One thing I wish it would have been improved, but it's small, is I wish it would have been nominated for more Oscars. I think the fact that the score was beautiful, it reminded me of WG, whatever his name is, that did the songs for West Wing. Very Snuffy. Much. What's his name?
WG Snuffy?
Something like that. You know, very similar when it comes to music between these two, but the fact that this movie was only nominated for one Oscar is a huge travesty. You know, yes, I get that it's a comedy. Yes, I get that it's a romantic comedy, but it was good. And I didn't look up movies that came out during this time. But you easily have best actor, best actress. You've got a best supporting actor in Martin Sheen. You've got a best screenplay. You've got best director. Everything that it was nominated for a Golden Globe should have been nominated for an Oscar. So that's my biggest thing. I wish that we would have seen more accolades for this movie. But that's just me. I don't know if you guys want to hit on that or no. Okay. Well,
you know, yeah,
I think I would.
It's hard. I'm going back and I'm trying to look at like what was out there, at the time, because I can't think of it and like list it off immediately. But, it's difficult. Awards are so finicky, you know, you never know what's going to really hit and what's not. And it all depends a lot on the politics at the moment. And so this is when Miramax is really coming into true form. So, you know, that Harvey's out there like seducing the vote as well, you know? So, I mean, like I get what you're saying. I think that awards are certainly one indication of a film's lasting staying power. But again, Shakespeare in Love won Best Picture. So, I mean, that completely negates the Oscars as a brand, truly. So, you know, that's where I'm at with these awards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the 90s had some, there's some interesting picks and choices, I think, for things. Looks like Braveheart was the one that won this year. What else? You had Apollo 13.
Nick Cage won for Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah. Sense and Sensibility was nominated for Best Picture. And then I've never even heard of this one. Il Postino, The Postman.
Okay. That's, Italian.
Yeah. So,
fun fact.
I didn't know, I guess I didn't know that Mr. Holland's Opus did come out this same year, and that is a movie that is so near and dear to my heart. Yes. God, talk about a movie that just makes you weep at the end of that film. But yeah, Richard, I didn't know that was the same year. This is a big year for Richard Dreyfuss then.
Yeah, he was nominated
for that. Mm-hmm. You also had Nixon. Nixon came out this year with Anthony Hopkins. So yeah, it was a stacked year. Another thing that okay, so this is small. I can look over this one. The ending just kind of felt like it fizzled out. Like I you know, a part of me would have been like, okay, let's hear a speech and like close on a speech. But do we really want to do that? I felt like Sorkin did it the way he wanted to, and he closed it the way he wanted to. But you know, a part of me was like, okay, what if we hear him speak and get those powerful words from him, and then close out as he's talking? You know, to assert that he is the American president and he's the leader of our nation. But I'm no screenwriter. I'm no Aaron Sorkin by any means. I am dumber than a box of rocks.
That's you know what?
I agree with me on that. Yeah.
you know what though? Then you have the love story that's left on.
We don't know.
It's not resolved. I don't know. I was okay. I think I was okay with, I think I see what you're saying, because he does give that, Craig's hinted at that great ending monologue where he
in the press room
goes after Rumson, defends Sidney, and then also, you know, says, you know what, we're gonna push on this issue. Which is also, that's where I'd say my issue lies, is he says, screw this crime bill. I had to give up this other thing, which was his girlfriend, the lobbyist. They make a big deal about her being a lobbyist his girlfriend. And then he literally says, screw this other bill. I'm going for the legislation my girlfriend pushed on. And that's where I think it gets a little, for this idealized world, I think they're getting a little sticky with the ethics of politics and relationships there. The other thing is I think this is just a great movie to just watch. This is like a perfect date night movie, man. It really is. Like,
yeah,
it's light, it's fun, but it talks about real issues so that are still relevant today. I just think it'd be interesting to see a version of this movie nowadays. See what Sorkin's take is 25 years later on this very issue, and just see what the movie looks like.
The American President 2, a new term.
It'd just be so much grimmer though, because we'd be like, you know, like Cindy Ellen Wade would be fighting for climate change, and like the world is burning, and then you know, they're talking about doing a crime bill, and they're using like school shootings as examples. Like the world is just a so much darker place than
it was. Yeah, this was. Yeah, this was not just pre-9/11. This was pre-Columbine.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was during the assault weapons ban. Like they had actually successfully passed the assault weapons ban for a while in the 90s, and you know, and that's like, could you imagine today? I mean, I guess Beto kind of did, but could you imagine a politician today being like, I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to take the guns. And like,
you mean when Beto committed political suicide?
Yeah, exactly. Like that, you know, that is, that was like going back and listening to that speech. And I guess like, since I'm filibustering here, to use a political term, I'll talk about my little improvement, and here it is. You know, I used to be a real big fan of How I Met Your Mother, and they had and that's before they went completely off the rails in the last season, but they had this wonderful like episode where like the window would shatter once you notice something about someone, then the window would shatter and that's all you can notice about them. So someone sort of tried to ruin the last speech for me. And this is what I needed out of my improvement. Okay. So when you're watching the last speech, all of the extras that are playing the reporters in the press room are horrible.
Yes.
At being extras. And so in particular, there's this one guy that they zoom in on, and he's writing as fast as you can on a piece of paper. there's nothing on the paper. Nothing going on to the paper. Just writing away, you know, making sure he's meeting the deadline. He's not going to remember any of it though, because he's not using the actual pen, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, so watching that scene is really difficult now because, like, I don't know, this was probably about 5 years ago. This guy was like, oh, those reporters are awful in that scene though. And that seriously put a damper on me watching that scene. Like now, like it's almost all I can look at is how horrible the extras were in that scene.
A lot of them are in there
on Rob Reiner. And I blame that on the editor. And I blame that on all those extras who just wanted a Kraft sandwich or whatever, you know, but yeah, so that's my improvement. I want better extras.
A lot of them are just sitting there too with like blank stares. They're like, they're intently listening. Like, I don't have anything to report. This is great.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because I never noticed that. So now I'm definitely going to be paying attention to that next time I watch
it. You have to go back and watch it tonight, man. I'm telling you.
I'll bring that to the Best Picture winner that year. Some of the editing in Braveheart. You should take a look at that. They're running with swords. Now they have no swords. Now they have swords again. And the first time I noticed it, now every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, I can't stop seeing this. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
They just needed their freedom from their swords, and then they wanted freedom with their swords.
Yeah.
And without swords.
Before we talk into the jump into the impact and talking about sequel, there's only no sequel, but we'll talk about the impact in West Wing. Anything else we want to talk about in terms of improvements for this movie? This movie's pretty sound. I mean, 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. All right, last thing I want to say that's an improvement, and Craig, I don't want to hear a thing from you, but I hate the fact that Andrew Shepherd is a Packers fan. Moving on. Sorry, Craig's a Packers fan. I'm a Bears fan. I had to say it. Let's talk about the overall impact of this movie. This movie, you know, I'm going to let Craig take it. Craig, you like this movie a lot. So talk about the impact.
Well, I mean, obviously it had a huge impact because we passed a crime bill with an assault weapons ban and we stopped global warming. So, I mean, obviously we had this film had such an impact on everything. No, but truly, I mean, I think that the impact of this film is that it is a testing ground for what would come 4 years later in the West Wing, right? I mean, it is like people will go back and discover the West Wing, do discover the West Wing still today on Netflix, soon to be moving to HBO Max. I mean, shoot, like what TV show has a reunion special to get out the vote. You know what I mean? Like that show has such a huge impact on people. And then people will go like, did you know that there's like a West Wing, the movie, and it's called The American President. And so I think it allowed for that to be out there as a potential idea. And I'm sure that when Sorkin pitched to NBC, he said, did you see this movie? I want to do that, but I want to do that as a series. And, you know, I think as far as everybody that was in this film was already fairly well established. It's not like it's breaking through any of the ensemble members. You did mention that so many, I guess I did in the fun facts, that so many of them are featured in the West Wing because Sorkin likes to use his players over and over again. That's why Josh Molina has work is because Sorkin does something new. And so, you know, I think that there's certainly some impact there with the ensemble and the casting, but truly the impact has to be in what we got 4 years later. And that was the seven seasons of the West Wing.
I think that's the sole impact. I mean, it's like you said, everybody's pretty much established. They're all well known, you know, but the huge impact is that I think this opens the door for the West Wing, like you said, Craig. Jay, any thoughts?
Well, yeah. And I would say besides that, just Sorkin himself, you know, Aaron Sorkin, the writer. That was one of the things we took into consideration on this. It's not just the election. Like, he's having a moment. Like, he's having a big moment right now, right? We just, Craig just covered, along with Lou and Steve from the network, they just covered the trial of Chicago 7. And that movie's amazing. We're going to be hearing more of it come Oscar season. We know we will. And that movie, you guys go into that. So you guys really need to check out their review on that movie. But man, does that feel
prescient to today's world and today's time. And then, like you said, they also just did the reunion. They did an episode of The West Wing as a stage production, while also giving information on how to register to vote and, you know, trying to have a positive social impact with the show. And it was a great episode they did. And, but I don't know if Sorkin was on set, cause they kind of do these cutaways where they show the behind the scenes stuff. So I don't know if he directed the theater production or what, but either way, he's having a moment 25 years later. You know, I had these two things come out within a month of each other. And I mean, I think he's, I don't know, man, he's just so associated with top quality, witty banter, quick back and forth. Yeah. So I think that's another big one. It's just setting him off even more. Cause looking at his career as a writer, it was A Few Good Men, story called Malice, which I haven't seen, and The American President. And then he went into Sports Night and West Wing and all that stuff. So this is what kind of kicks him into the stratosphere as a writer. But I would say with impact too, is just keeping that. I think idealism in this world, in this political sphere, I don't think is a bad thing. And I think he inspires a lot of people with, I think he tries to use art to have a positive impact on the greater world. And I think that's another impact. And like I said, I think this is West Wing light. This is much lighter. It's not really as much about the policy as much as it's about human relationships. But I think that's another impact as well. And then we'll talk a little bit West Wing if we're going to do some ratings and stuff. Cause
let's think
all of us are.
Yeah. Let's hop right into it. Staple here on Front Row Flashbacks is if we talk about a movie that's got a flashback, if we talk about a movie that's got a sequel, we always talk about ranking them. So let's treat The West Wing like as a sequel. So how would you guys rate The American President to The West Wing? Who wants to go first?
Because I'll go first.
All right, go ahead.
It'll go West Wing number one for me, then American President, just because with the elongated story format, I think we're able to dig into it. I know I'm on like round four or five of that show. I know, Craig, I think you got me beat. I think several members of the Front Row Network have
me beat. Godfather's got us beat.
But there's a few seasons where there's some weird stuff going on, mainly when Aaron Sorkin leaves. But it recovers, you know, the last couple.
It goes, I'm going to find the most ridiculous constitutional crisis ever. Goodbye. See you later. Yeah.
Get yourself out of this one.
But the last
John
two seasons.
John Wells is like, thanks, guy. Thank you, guy.
Last two seasons, pull it back. They pull it back, and it's really good. But I think I can't imagine a movie like The American President being made now. I don't think that Sorkin and Rob Reiner were naive, but I think the way he wrote the script, there was a naivete. You know, I go out to DC a few times a year for some veteran stuff. And I'm like Sydney, man. I'm every time I go into the Capitol or I go to the office buildings and I get to sit down and chat with one of the leaders, you know, I have that Frank Capra, you know, way of looking at these things and trying to approach them. So I like that. But I like that West Wing digs into it a little more. Plus, Toby Ziegler, man, like one of my all-time favorite TV characters, like top three or four, definitely. So I would go West Wing one, American President two.
All right, Craig, go ahead.
I think it's difficult to do your ranking based on the entirety of The West Wing because, of course, I love that show so much. So what I'll do is actually something a little different, and I'll take it just the pilot of The West Wing versus The American President because I do think that that is probably the most like closely correlated between the two. And I think in that instance, and this may sound like sacrilege, just going up against those two, I probably would put this ahead of it in The American President, only because you do get more of those interactions with like the man in charge, right? So it humanizes the president in a way. And of course, The West Wing does that too. And the pilot, if you remember, that's when Bartlett is in a bicycle accident and he has to get rushed back to the West Wing and all of that. That first episode, the pilot episode, is actually where Sam's found to be sleeping with a prostitute and all of that is going on. And so it's much more about the staffers. But I think that for sure, I think that American President does enough to establish that ethos, that world. And I wish I would have been able to follow those characters even further. And that's, you bring up a really good point, Jay, about Spin City. Spin City is one of those that I remember seeing as a kid, like, again, like that middle school kind of like, and I would watch them and I would think they're funny, but that's a show I really need to just go back and just binge. Right? Because I feel like it's a show I would really like now. And maybe I was just a little young for at the time. I still enjoyed it because I liked Michael J. Fox, but I think I would get it so much more now. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe something that'll be on my viewing list in the near future.
Awesome. To me, I wish we could do like a collaboration ranking because this was a second collaboration for Reiner and Sorkin. They did A Few Good Men, and I would put American President ahead of A Few Good Men. But in terms of West Wing versus American President, I mean, this is a movie podcast, so I'm going to put the movie ahead. Yes, The West Wing is great. But in terms of telling a story and how beautifully this movie was done, this movie takes the cake. It is believable. It's got believable characters. Not saying that The West Wing doesn't, but they've got seven seasons to develop these characters, where this movie developed characters, told their stories, told their emotions in an hour and 45 minutes. So definitely American President and then The West Wing. All right. Well, that is going to wrap it up for us.
Hey, hang on. I want to riff off something there though.
Okay.
And something Craig's, I actually think I like the story of the staffers. I think I find that more interesting.
Oh yeah.
Than the president, which I think is another reason I like the West Wing better, is because I don't feel like with like, the couple outside of Martin Sheen's character, with Michael J. Fox and then some of those other characters, we don't really get to know them very well. They do their part, but we don't get to know Michael J. Fox is like on the permanent verge of an anxiety attack in this whole movie. He does great, but you're like, what else is going on with this guy? But there was another ranking I wanted to see too, what you guys thought. President Shepard versus President Bartlett.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard to do too. You got to weigh the pros and the cons. I mean, Andrew Shepard is a bit of a ladies' man who maybe puts his personal life in front of the job. Jed Bartlett is kind of a war criminal through the West Wing. So, but I think it's just so hard to do those kind of rankings because you get so little of Andrew Shepard and you get so much of Jed. And I mean, like, to me, that's like your ideal, right? So I have to put Martin Sheen ahead of it there, but I would have loved to see a series where Martin Sheen is the chief of staff, is the John Spencer. I think that would have been a really cool series. So in an alternate timeline where this movie spins off into a TV show of The American President, I think that would have been a really interesting thing to see.
Yeah. What about you, Ryan?
Josiah Bartlett. I mean, he's just, you get so much of his character development. You see more of his emotions in The West Wing. I mean, you see him as a hard leader. You see him as someone making the hard choices. You see him battling people on the Hill, and you see him going through personal things, whether it's his battle with MS or even the death of Miss Lanham and getting the best series finale in The Two Cathedrals. But definitely Josiah Bartlett, and he likes Notre Dame football, and Shepard likes Packers football. So to me, it's a no brainer.
Now we're comparing college and prep. I don't even
That's okay. know what's happening. It's football based.
I think Craig makes a good point. Tough to rate him, but I'm going to go with Jed Bartlett, the alleged potential war criminal. But I ask you, Craig, what's the value of a proportionate response?
You know, I just there, like you said, there's some areas in that show where Sorkin just decided to write them into a corner a little bit, and that might have been one of them.
Pivot out of the corner.
Oh, too late. His daughter's kidnapped.
Yep. 25th.
wait, John.
Oh, by the way, I got another show.
What's he doing?
All right. That is going to do it for us tonight. But before we go, we got some things coming up. Craig, what's going on with Beyond the Mouse or any other shows that you got coming up?
Well, first of all, I would go and plug our full disclosure of the Trial of Chicago 7, which, of course, is on Netflix. You can check that out on your feed now. Not knowing exactly when this episode will drop, Beyond the Mouse, we release a Disney-themed episode every single Friday. Lots of different interviews and things like that. Actually, as we're recording this is my second podcast of the day. We recorded an episode earlier today with Kevin Rafferty, who is a Disney Imagineer who has made so many amazing attractions for the company. Tower of Terror, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, Finding Nemo, Submarine Voyage, all these Rock and Roller Coaster, all of these attractions that people know and love. This is the man that helped create them, and it's such a fun conversation. So that'll be coming out Thanksgiving week for us. And then also tomorrow, actually, it's kind of like an embarrassment of riches this week. Tomorrow I'm sitting down with Academy Award winning director Brenda Chapman, and we're going to talk about her career and with the Pixar company and directing Brave, but also with Walt Disney and DreamWorks. And then she also has a new movie that has just been released called Come Away, which is her take on fairy tales and particularly Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland. So going to be an awesome conversation with her as well. And that will drop in the feed. Beyond that, we also do lots of just fun interviews, fun shows all about the Disney company. So check out Beyond the Mouse on either the Beyond the Mouse feed or sometimes on the Front Row Network feed as well.
Thank you, Craig, and thank you so much for being a part of this tonight. I know you had enjoyed this movie, so thank you for being on our show.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate being able to spend time with Jay.
Duly noted. Jay, what do we got coming up for flashbacks?
Well, first of all, it's Beyond the Mouse. I kept trying to call it Behind the Mouse, and I was thinking like Behind the Music from VH1.
Oh, no.
It's the dark cocaine side of the stories that you guys tell.
Don't go behind me.
So got a few things. We just dropped today. I did a Veterans Day special with Captain Dale Dye, who you and I interviewed, Ryan, and we did a review. He was my guest co-host, and we reviewed a movie called The Steel Helmet, which is a 1951 Korean War movie that probably not many listeners have watched.
I want to watch it now, though, after listening to that episode. That guy is like the best co-host ever on this podcast.
I love him.
You know, something. What did he say? Something like, well, if you're just sitting there like a numbnuts or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, my God, this guy. Just yeah. Incredible.
Yeah, it was good. We had a good time too. We get along pretty well. So that's a good one to check. Even if you haven't seen the movie, I think it was just a fun discussion to talk about this movie that's had this really big impact, even though it might not be on a lot of people's radar. Other thing too, later this here in a week or two, I'll be interviewing National Book Award finalist John Del Vecchio. He's got a new book coming out. He's actually under Captain Dye's publisher, so they reached out, and we're going to have a discussion about, you know, representation, inclusion in the arts as he represents, you know, the veteran demographic and kind of their perspective. So that should be an interesting discussion. Then later in November, I need to link up with Convince Me host Larry Smith, because we are going to start Flashbacks Presents Cobra Kai. We're going to get through season one and season two before January, because come January, season three of Cobra Kai comes out on Netflix. And once we get to that point, we'll be covering every episode, and that should be a whole lot of fun. Other than that, hopefully everybody, you know, find us on Front Row Flashbacks, you know, f- follow us, whatever podcast, you know, medium you use, whether it be Spotify or Apple. And also make sure and join the Front Row Flashbacks podcast group on Facebook, because we can continue that discussion there too.
Next month, Flashbacks is going to be playing a little bit of a game as we talk about Clue. Clue celebrates its 35th anniversary, and what better way to close out 2020 with nobody really having a clue of what 2021 is going to bring. So we're going to talk Clue and what a masterpiece that movie is. As always, you can find the Front Row Network on Facebook and subscribe to our main feed on Spotify or whatever you use to access your podcast. You can also find us on NPR Illinois' website under Community Voices. You can follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews. That's reviews with a Z. You can also find us on Patreon, Front Row Network's Facebook page. So if you enjoyed this content, or if you want to be a part of our show, or you know, you just like hearing about movies, please become a patron, and we might be able to do something special. You can suggest a movie that you want to hear about. But yeah, go check us out on Patreon. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight. And thank you to my fellow hosts. Well, one in particular, and that's Jay. Thank you, Jay. And Craig. And always, Craig, really, thank you. I appreciate you coming on. Aaron, I miss you. Please come back so we don't have to have Craig back.
You know, I'm always open to coming on, especially when Aaron bails on you, which seems to happen frequently. So
it's like an every other month thing, so it's fine.
You know, it's one of those things, though. You can't really blame her when it's you sending the invite, Ryan. I get that, you know, maybe if it was coming from Jay, she would have been here tonight.
Yeah.
But you sending it along, I don't know.
Yep.
I got, wow, now this movie feels modern.
You're right, Craig. Maybe it's the Front Row's fault for making me host. I don't know.
You stay along long enough and we give you a show. That's how right. It works here at the Front Row.
All right. Well, Craig, thank you again. I'm glad we were able to talk about one of your favorites. Really appreciate you hopping on.
No, I do truly appreciate the opportunity. Thank you both. I really like talking the American president, and you guys are doing a killer job with this Flashbacks thing. So congrats on your show. It's fun to jump away from the mouse every now and then and to talk, jump from behind the mouse apparently and talk a bit about some other kind of movies as well.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks everybody listening. And always, we will see you in the Front Row.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z.